All good? Okay. All right. I'll flag you.
Before we get started, I'm Lenny Klinger, chapter president of Mystery Writers of America, and don't have much to say. First, I just want to remind everybody that we have upcoming this Sunday from 5 to 8 p.m. Our summer party jointly sponsored by the Sisters in Christ, the Orange County chapter. There's details on our website about where it is. You all come. It's in Newport Beach. And tonight...
On the ocean.
On the ocean. Tonight we are delighted to present our first program relating to our Speaker Zero. And the person who is now in charge of our Speaker Zero and organizing these programs is our own member of the Board of Directors and newly Edgar winner, Naomi Girard. Naomi.
Thanks for coming. This is going to be a really fun event, and mostly because I invited friends to be on the panel, and I think that's really important. And this is going to be a really special and I think really helpful event. And I'm going to explain the format. First of all, I will tell you this. The bathroom is open on this side, just to let you know, so you can go over there. And another piece of housekeeping, if you get thirsty, feel free to get a bottle of water over there. In terms of the format today, we'll be hearing from these three experts. They'll be speaking briefly from 10 to 15 minutes, and then we'll have a Q&A session. And they'll be exploring topics on how to present, how to make contacts with people in order to do author events, and finally how to read in an interesting way. So that will be the topics they cover. After our Q&A session, we'll take a break, a water break, and then we'll convene again, and Catherine Lilly, who helped with this program, will be talking a little bit about our Speakers Bureau listing that we'll be placing on the website. And one of the sheets of paper on the seats is a information sheet on that. And then we're going to do Mystery Idol. So we have two volunteers, one who will be doing a short book presentation and another person who will be doing a reading. And these are our judges. And you could, you know, who's Paula, who's Simon? I don't know. You could figure it out. And, we told the people who volunteered, you know, there cannot be any tears. You know, no crying, Daryl. You have to take it, okay? But we hope really, seriously, we hope to learn from this interactive session. So I'll briefly introduce you to all three, and they'll just take turns speaking. First of all, I'd like to introduce Joan Hansen. And most of you are probably familiar with Joan, but unless you're not, she's a former high school teacher and vice principal. And she is probably most famous in our circles for being the founder of the Festival of Women Authors, as well as the Men of Mystery in Orange County. And these two events, they attract 500 people each. You know, they're amazing literary events. And I'm sure she'll be touching a little bit on that. And she has a sign-up sheet right over there, too, about it. And so Joan, for her work, because she's kind of like this queen of, you know, literary events, especially in the Orange County area. And last year, the Mystery Writers of America honored her with a Raven Award at the Edgar's Banquet. So she's nationally known for, you know, her work. So we are so, and she came all the way from Westminster to talk to us. So we don't even talk. And next to Joan is George Riviero. George and I have known each other for more than 20 years. We're calculating. We're studying in Japan together in Tokyo, and that's how we first met. And then we subsequently kind of lost touch, got, you know, reunited, and then lost touch again. And then we met at the Basketball Hall of Fame in Springfield, Massachusetts. About, what was it? 5 years ago or so? Yeah.
When they opened the new building.
Right. And George is an instructor of English, and English is a second language at Cal State Los Angeles, as well as at Pasadena City College. He is a freelance journalist, and you've written some books that have been translated in Japanese, right? Sports-related books. And he writes for some Japanese periodicals. And he also is a budding, right, mystery writer. And he's here today because he's one of the former district governors? Division governors for the Toastmasters International. So he can give us... Noel Elmet, sitting next to George. Noel's going, do I have to stand right here? And Noel and I have gotten to know each other more recently for our work on the inaugural Asia Pacific American Book Festival that was held in LA. Noel is very famous. He's a literary writer. His
That's I've never heard of.
And he's also very funny. And this is his second book, Talking to the Moon. And it's a literary book, but there's a crime. It was kind of inspired by the shooting of a Filipino mailman over here in the valley, right? In a hate crime at a Jewish, I think North Valley Jewish Center. Yeah. So that was the impetus for Noel to write this book. It's beautifully done. And it was, in fact, very positively reviewed in Eddie Muller's mystery column in the San Francisco Chronicle. So, I'd highly recommend you. You have a couple of books here,
that's
too.
It.
Yeah. Well, one lucky person combined this book. And Noel is also a host of book events at Skylight Books in Silver Lake area, independent bookstore, as well as other events all throughout Los Angeles. So he's kind of the Joan Hansen, I think, of Los Angeles. So a really good person to know. And also Noel has done one night. He's a performance artist, so he could bring a lot. He's going to speak specifically about how to read. Let's start it. So Joan, why don't you start us off?
Because I'm so short, I'm going to stand up. I'm truly honored to be here and to be among all of you, because I'm not the writer that all of you are, or many of you are, but my passion is writers and connecting readers with writers, and for that reason I have done these different festivals, and I will mention them a little bit later. But I was a speaker at the National Conference of the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators a few years ago, and I put together a presentation on how to do a school speech. And I took that letter of the alphabet that we use most of all, the letter I, and I took words that start with that letter and put them together as keywords, after which I said a few pithy thoughts. So, a lot of what I did for them doesn't apply to you, but some did, and so I did a revision of it. And afterwards, if you wish, you may pick up my little flyer with my I words. So, it's called Creating Memorable Presentations, and my first one is Imagine. Imagine the wonderful time that you are going to have when you bring yourself and your books into the lives of other people. But you cannot do it if you are, but we're all going to be, a big talking face. You have to do more than just be up in front and talking. So for that reason, you don't do what we're going to do tonight. As you make your arrangements, you must include the contact person in your planning. Share your ideas and your intentions, the length of the presentation you wish to make, the timing that they want you to have, the location, where it's going to be, what the seating arrangements are. Even better if you can come look at it ahead of time so that you know what the facilities are. The third I is integrate. Integrate your ideas into a carefully choreographed presentation. One nice thing would be to have a CD of music playing in advance. If you're in a bookstore, that music just might entice some people to come and watch, but it helps set a mood. The next I is individualize. Individualize your session. Tilt your talk to fit your audience. Basically, most of your audience is going to be just like what this audience is. But you might be asked to speak at a school, at a public library, where they have a teen group. So you would tilt it in a different way. Introduce, that's the next I, yourself and your family, your pets, anything that humanizes you, but do it in a personal manner. Inform your listeners about how a book is published, from your first creative thought through that awful process to the book in the hand. Impress your audience about the challenges of such a production and your profession, creating that book and connecting with the publisher. And those of you who are writers know exactly what I mean. Inject humor, liveliness, pep, and vigor. Capital I, because many of the people who are going to be listening to you are probably wannabe writers, therefore this I is help to improve the writing skills of these wannabe writers by describing the writing process, the fact that it's never just a first draft, that you rewrite, rewrite, rewrite. When my authors say that in the schools, the teachers all cheer because they try to tell their kids that too. And that even you, a professional, will get your paperback with all kinds of red marks on it. So that doesn't mean they hate you. They just want your book to be better. You might also share some of the humorous or frustrating experiences that you've had with your editors. And I'm sure some of you have had. Infuse them with the joy of reading. You will help books spring to life and spring into their hands. And issue a challenge. Read 5 times as many books during this next year, including yours, of course. If you do all of those I things, I promise that you will be impressive, incomparable, indispensable, irresistible, indescribable, influential, intriguing, invincible, inspirational, immortal, and invited back again. Now, I'm going to just highlight suggestions for making those connections. And they're not on my handout, so put it up here. If you wish to speak with people in a school, let me tell you, my experience with my authors festival says there is very little time for anything so frivolous as listening to an author. That's quote, quote. However, your books could be read by high school students. Therefore, you might make a connection with the creative writing teacher or the journalism teacher in a high school. That would be the perfect entree because that teacher would love to introduce her kids to an author. And you'd have a classroom situation that could be very exciting. And some of my authors have done this, and it is really exciting. Or go to the director of curriculum for a district and find out the names of those creative writing teachers so you don't have to go around school to school. If, by chance, you grew up here, go to your old high school and be an alum who's famous, and that would be another way to do it. Community colleges are another source of speakers, and with that you would go to their foundation office. They always have a foundation office which is charged with raising money. And one way they raise money is to have author presentations and charge people for them. I'm supporting the Long Beach City College Library, and we've been bringing in authors over the years. And it's all through the foundation because they do it as a fundraiser. You may not get anything, but you will get exposed, and your books will be there available for sale. And my feeling from what I've heard from the different authors, it isn't so much that you're getting paid, it's that you're selling your book and you're getting known. And if people buy your book, pass it on to their friends, that's really good. And the other advantage of doing something in the library, well, I'll get to libraries in a minute. I mentioned the community colleges. You might also look into the state colleges, and once again, the creative writing teacher or the journalism teacher, because you will underline everything that teacher has said, but you're the expert saying it, and so you will be validating them. Libraries also have foundations, and they do fundraising, and there's a little tiny town encircled by the city of Long Beach called Signal Hill, and they are fundraising to build a new library, and one of my Men of Mystery spoke to them last spring, and one of my literary women is going to be speaking to them in the fall, and they fundraise. Again, you get a chance to sell your books, you get the exposure, you get an audience, and you're helping a library to be built. So again, the foundations with the libraries. About bookstores, and I'm sure you're going to talk more about this, the chains will have a community outreach person who will be setting up these things. So if you're, in addition to your publisher or your publicist who just might book a few, you can go to your local Barnes & Noble and Borders and talk to the community outreach person and say, I want to come and talk, and they will do publicity for you. The independents which is where my heart is, go to the owner or manager, and they'll be thrilled to do something. A lot of them will have a newsletter that they will publish ahead of time. We use Mysterious Galaxy down in San Diego for our books, and they do an online beautiful newsletter, and they list all the authors they're having speak to them. And the last thing is literary book festivals. UCLA Book Festival, I'm sure you've all been there. I've gone there. I've been a docent there. I've been whatever, but I much prefer being a hunter of authors instead. But if what you do there is ahead of time, find out what bookstores are going to be, or it's mainly bookstores are going to have booths, and see if you can get on the schedule to sign books for half an hour. That means your books will be there for sale, and you will be signing books for at least half an hour. Mysterious Galaxy always has a booth, and Mystery Bookstore. They have a prime location for theirs, and they have lots of authors signing there too. And that's a good source for you to get the exposure. There are some organizations that put on author events. In Fullerton, the Assistance League puts on an author day, and theirs they have both men and women, and even though it's Assistance League. And in Torrance, there's an American Business Women's Association that puts on an author day, and they have men and women authors too. And they are, again, fundraisers for the organization, but you get the chance to speak and to sell your books. And then I'm going to talk about my events for just a minute. 15 years ago, I started the Literary Guild of Orange County, and we do this Festival of Women Authors every spring. And we have 8 or 9 authors. We have 3 major speakers, and then we have 5 breakout speakers. Naomi and Jacqueline Winspear did a fantastic mystery panel for us a couple of years ago. We've had everyone from Elizabeth George and Alice Siebel that you have heard of to people you've never heard of, but once they come to us, we have Ethel Fugard's daughter. She's a writer, and she wrote a fantastic book called Skinner's Drift, and Ethel Fugard is this internationally known playwright, but he has this fantastic daughter who writes wonderful books. So we try to have both brand new writers, we get some from the UCI writing program, and established authors. So we've been doing that for 15 years, and then in 2000 I said, I'd like to have something, because only a sprinkling handful of men come to that. And I said, I want to do something where the men will come. And my co-conspirator, with whom I've worked from the beginning, he's been my hotel person, he said, he was the only man on my committee, he said, the only way you're going to get the men, Joan, is to have it be a sports figure or a porno writer. No. So I thought about mysteries. And Patricia McFall, who's a mystery writer, had done a thing with a calendar of men of mystery several years ago, and she told me about it. And I asked her if I could have her name, Men of Mystery, and she said I could. And so we have this event. This one will be our 8th one. And the way this works, we have 50 authors. We have 500 people show up, 500 also for the women's thing. 500 people show up, one man at every table, mystery writer, and everybody gets to sit at a table with an author. They come in, they have the little book, they see the names of the authors, they go into the bookstore ahead of time, see your picture on the poster, and think, oh, I want to sit with that hunk. Anyway, so they pick the author they want to sit with and spend the day sitting with that man. And I go around with a microphone, and each one gets 1 minute to talk about himself and his books, just 1 minute. And sometimes they run over, and Bob Levinson, you may know him, grabs the microphone and walks with me to the next table because he never finishes. But he also was the one who announced the fact that I was getting that raven, and so I let him have the extra time. But they also play against each other. But you have about an hour of one person after another, totally different voices, different everything. It's very lively and peppy. And then we have our first morning speaker, and this year it's going to be Tim Green, who used to play in the NFL for Atlanta. And he, at the same time that he was playing for Atlanta, he was going to law school. He graduated top of his class in law school and still played football. He was on TV as a color commentator and has also been on NPR. Now he writes thrillers, and they're very good. Some are related to the sport, but many of them are other very, very good writer, and he's gorgeous. And then we will have lunch, and that's the time that the men... We have this delicious, well, not first, after Tim, we have the signing time, and then we have the gorgeous lunch with the delicious mushroom soup, that even though if you don't like mushrooms, you will love their soup. And people see me, and they say, oh, I know who you are, be sure you keep having the mushroom soup. That's how important it is. But then we have 20 minutes at the table where you talk with the people at your table. Then we will have our second speaker, who is Vince Flynn, who writes political thrillers. And then after that, there'll be a little more time. Oh, and we also honor boy writers. Four high schools select their absolutely outstanding boy writer, and we honor them as well. So it's an exciting day, and if you've never attended, there is a sign-up sheet at the back that has our logo, which has our man. This year, because our two guys, both Vince and Tim, are so good-looking, we're putting their pictures on the front, too. They're so cute. Anyway, so that gives you a little bit of an idea, and I hope I've given you something that you can use. Thanks.
I'm going to speak sitting down. I told Naomi when she asked me to be in this that I thought I might be here under false pretenses, since I'm not a published mystery writer, even though I've been working on a mystery for more than 15 years, off and on, more off than on. But she assured me my Toastmaster credentials were what counted here. All of you are writers, so all of you have a way with words. But having a way with words doesn't mean that you can stand up and have a way with words. We know that people fear speaking in public more than they fear death, according to polls. So today I'm going to just talk briefly about how to make a presentation. And my advice is preparation, preparation, preparation. The first kind of preparation, and Joan spoke about it a little bit, know your audience. Who's going to be in your audience? Know the size of your audience. Small group like this, maybe you can sit down, be more relaxed. You need to know, are they general readers? Are they mystery readers? Are they going to be readers of your books? These things count. If they're readers of your books, there might be some people who will ask questions about how the book ends, which would give it away for other people. So you have to be careful about that. I think the most important thing when you're doing this kind of presentation is to reveal something about yourself. Again, Joan mentioned this. And I would say, show, don't tell. Anecdotes reveal character, either about your protagonist or about yourself. The best example I can give of this is an example that Michael Connelly used. I heard him at a BoucherCon a few years ago. He was talking about how with Harry Bosch, his detective, he always writes that Harry Bosch does not suffer fools gladly. But he felt irritated about that because he was telling his reader that instead of showing the reader. And then one time, Bosch goes into a government office and he's talking with this pushy female federal agent, and she's whirling around in her chair in this very crowded office, and she's resisting giving him the file that he wants. And then finally, Bosch wins the argument, and she gets up and storms out to go find the file. And Bosch stands up and moves her desk 3 inches closer to her chair. So the next time she whirls around, she's going to hit her knee. And Connelly said when he wrote that, he was happy all day, because that showed how Bosch doesn't suffer fools gladly. And it was an act of showing, not telling. As a writer, you will probably want to write your entire presentation, your speech, whatever you're talking about, out completely, word for word. We advise against this. We suggest make a list of bullets, and you can fill it in later. You want to remember the bullets. You don't need to remember word for word. If you're a first-time speaker and you have a memorized speech, you're going to panic if you forget one word, and then you might shut down. You might be standing up there looking like a deer with the headlights on you, and you forgot what you're going to say. Practice it, obviously. Practice it at home in front of somebody. Most speaking engagements will give you a time frame. You have to fit in within that time frame. You don't want to speak too far over, or they won't ask you back. If you practice alone, it's very easy to read it too fast and you think you have a lot more time than you really do. When you're in an audience like this, you have to pause sometimes, let your audience laugh, let them respond to what you're saying, and that will eat up some of the time. So if you can, practice in front of a live person. Right here, I'm going to fit in a shameless plug for Toastmasters. If you do this and you're still uncomfortable with speaking in public, I highly recommend Toastmasters International. It's the world's largest public speaking organization. If you go to www.toastmasters.org, you can type in your zip code and you can find a club fairly near you. The clubs meet. There are clubs that meet every day of the week. You have morning clubs, afternoon clubs, evening clubs. You pay a small set of dues, much like Mystery Writers of America, and then you attend the meetings and you start speaking and building up the confidence. Speaking is just like writing. Practice makes perfect. And if you're one of those people that fear speaking more than death, you want to take a look at Toastmasters. Joan was telling me just before we had dinner together that one of her men of mystery he called her and he said, I can do everything except the 1 minute introduction. He gives them 1 minute. I was saying 1 minute's not enough. And she gets a call from one writer who says, I don't want to do the 1 minute introduction. And he solved his problem by bringing his publisher. But that is fear of public speaking. You don't want to have that. You're going to sell yourself. The second type of preparation is know the place. Come to the meeting place early. Check it out. You want to see what the seating arrangement are, what the table, if you have a microphone. Especially the bigger the event, the more you want to check it out in advance. If you're using equipment, you want to do a dry run of the equipment. I told Naomi on my list of things, I said, you want to check your PowerPoint presentation. She said, well, mystery writers don't use PowerPoint that much. But you might. Or else you might have other visuals. You want to make sure that those are working. And you want to have backup. Backup means a handout, just in case these visual aids don't work, if it's key to your presentation. And Naomi mentioned the restroom. One good friend of mine in Toastmasters once earned $25,000 for a speech. He was speaking at an all-day event with inspirational speakers. And he was next. They came and they mic'd him. And he was standing there looking at the speaker before him. And he thought, all right, I'm going to slip into the restroom. So he went into the restroom. He didn't realize the mic was live. When he came out, everybody, and there were 1,000 people in the audience, everybody was looking at him. When he was introduced, the introducer said, someone who really needs no introduction today. And the third kind of preparation is make sure that your books are going to be there. Keep in touch with the venue. I attended a reading that Naomi did at a Borders. When she arrived there, nobody there knew that she was going to be speaking. The manager who had talked with her was no longer at that location. So if you're making the arrangement yourself, some of you may not be, but if you are making the arrangements yourself, you want to check into those things. Make sure that they know you're coming and make sure that they have your book, because that's what you're trying to do, is to sell your book. Thank you.
I feel the need to stand, actually. I ate something kind of heavy, and I feel like if I sit down, I'm just going to sink. So, first of all, thank you very much, Joan and George. I've learned a lot, actually, so I don't have to say some things because you said it already. So I probably won't be needing the entire 15 minutes. But thank you to Naomi for asking me to do this. And by asking me to do this, I actually sort of ran with it because I gave me the opportunity to do something I've been meaning to do for a long time, which is contact other people who do what I do in Los Angeles and ask them, so what do you think about this? You know, what makes a good reading? And so I contacted 7 people who run reading series in Los Angeles, and 5 of them got back to me. One was Benjamin Weissman, who conducts the reading series at the Hammer Museum. Diane Leslie, who's been hosting events at Sutton's Brentwood for something like 20 years. And Juwanza Dimasani, who runs the reading series at the World Stage in Leimert Park. I also gave them the opportunity to remain anonymous if they choose, and two of them said, please don't tell them that I'm providing them with answers. They didn't want to be identified, but I've incorporated their answers into my presentation and tried to draw themes from that. And I think one big thing that they talked about is to know the event and to know the place. That something that the other coordinators talked about, and I agree with, is to, you know, don't just go to a place and say, I want to do a reading here, you know. But, you know, make sure you poked your head in before you go to Skylight. That, you know, it's usually nice if you say, you know, I've been to a couple of events here, and I really like what you do, or I saw Walter Mosley here, I saw Isabel Allende here, and I thought it was really terrific, and, you know, please consider me, because some of us are very protective of the readings that we do. I know some of them are. Ben Weissman said that he works very hard to keep his readings ghoul-free, he said. He said you know, he's worked very hard to keep his readings ghoul-free. And then...
Why are we closing at 8 o'clock tonight?
I'll try to talk about. And the other thing that they were conscious of was this whole idea that about how to do readings. I know that some of them have different ways of how to do readings, and they're talking to the store manager is great. Sometimes they do have an event person you can talk to. But something that they all said is, like, at Skylight Bookstore, for example, we will do 3 or 4 book events a week, you know, and it would really help if you do your own marketing to get people there. We do our marketing, we have a newsletter, we remind people, but if we know that an author will do that extra push, you know, that'd be terrific. And it's interesting, you're talking about the PowerPoint presentation, how you almost don't do PowerPoints. I would actually think about looking into it, particularly for the university setting, that it's almost expected that, you know, when they're having an author come to the school, you know, to lecture about his book, you know. And I found after doing a few universities for myself, it was, you know, and sometimes they give you the entire hour and a half, and I can be entertaining. I can read for, you know, sometimes an hour and a half for a 9 a.m. class can sometimes be, whoo, you know. So actually, particularly for that age group between 20, you know, 18 and 22, having visuals going on over and over and over again and saying, this is what I do it. And sometimes they're even looking for, you know, things. And it could be a basic presentation, the background of my book, the objective of my book is, this is what I want to accomplish with my book, you know, things like that. That's just a basic presentation in case you should need it, in case you should need it. But I have one for Talking to the Moon because it turns out when I'm invited to go to universities, it's just nice to have, you know, that I can do a presentation in case they need it, because sometimes they do it because they have to take a test on your book, you know. So they like to have the material there. I mean, and like George talked about, you know, be there early, be relaxed, be prepared. And I say this, you know, being there early, I can't even tell you how helpful that is for me as a coordinator. Sometimes I'm looking at that watch thinking, gosh, you know, we're supposed to start this reading in 5 minutes, and the author's not here yet. You know that, and that's happened. And it's just, you know, and we say, you know, and if you're going to be late, at least have a telephone number for the store saying, "I'm on my way." You know, because we've had an event. 100 people came, and the author was going through some crisis and forgot. Mm-hmm. You know, he forgot about the event, and you know, and trust me, do you think I like going in front of 100 people on a Friday night, bear traffic, and say, ladies and gentlemen, we're terribly sorry, you know, and, you know, so let us know what's going on. Be relaxed any which way, and not to say to go liquored up or anything, but, you know, but, you know, if you need to do those breathing exercises, do those breathing exercises. Let me tell you, you know, as a person who's setting up the reading, and for other people too, we're not just necessarily worried about you. We're checking mic. We're doing things. Are there enough books? We're doing all those things. And I've had an experience with authors like, oh my God, do you think it'll be okay? So many people are going to come. You know, you know, they're tugging on my arm the entire way through. And you know, what I've had to do is I stick them in the room. You know, we have a loft area. I'm like, I just have them sit there. Just, okay, sit. You know, here's some water. You know, I'll be right back. I do everything, and then I sit with the author just to sometimes just calm him or her down. And it's you know, it's amazing. You know, sometimes how some people are afraid or people are scared. And something to know is that the audience really wants to like you. You know, they're not coming there to bash you or anything. They're people who come to the readings are really curious to know about what you're trying to do, what's being said, you know, what's being done. So, you know, just know that. And also just something that one of the anonymous respondents said. She said, I always appreciate when an author is respectful to all the staff involved, from the security to the custodians to the staff who assist with the book signing to the curator. We really don't appreciate diva behavior. And Ben Weissman has said, you know, something he's accepted is that sometimes you'll just have to deal with diva behavior, you know, that sort of that egotistical thing. But for those of you who are starting your careers, you know, one said, one thing I love about doing this readings is that new writer. You know, that new writer who's coming and they're just there for the experience and they're doing it just to see who their readers are, who their lifelong fans might be. You know, and they love that. You know, and I love that too. I say I love, you know, meeting authors earlier in their career. I love that because they are so wide-eyed and bushy, and they're looking forward to doing this. They want to read well, and they want to, you know, make sure everyone's happy. So I've seen it happen too. You know, the third, fourth, fifth book down the line, that new author is completely different. A completely different person. You know, it's just expect whether just, you know, how many books did I sell? How many people, so we love working with new writers. You know, I think it's really exciting. And Jawanza Dumasani says, a well-planned reading should be seamless. The reader should know what they're reading and the order. They should engage the audience with eye contact as they move throughout the reading. They might share short comments about what's being read. I go through my reading mirror several days before. And I think that's really key, to be prepared, to know what you're reading. If you can, make sure that your reading has a beginning, middle, and end. Okay, but not so much so where you're giving away the ending of your novel. And I've seen that happen too, where it's like, gosh, this guy needs to shut up because the publicist is on my and the publicist for this guy's like, you have to make him be quiet. He's talking too much. He's telling too much of the book. You know, you know, what do you want me to do? You know, weigh him down. You know, so but make sure you know it is clear and concise. And you, if you're going to start reading, say, and this is a character who, you know, so that when you're reading, we're like, who was that person? Now, what was that about? I mean, well, just a little bit of setting up, a little bit of background, just something like that, to give your reading some sense of fullness. And the last thing I want to bring up is remember time. And it seems like a good reading time, if you're doing a bookstore, is what everyone seems to say an hour is a good time, an hour and a half. If you have hour and a half is probably the longest you should go. 20-25 minutes for your reading, you know, and maybe a 15-20 minute session for question and answer. And be prepared for that. And I've been to a number of readings in Los Angeles, and that seems to be a pretty good marker. You know, be prepared to read 20-25 minutes. You know, Diane Leslie said, she alluded to why you should also be careful about time. How many of you are comfortable in these seats? How many of you can be comfortable in the seats for the next hour and a half? Right. You know, so and we have to be conscious of that. You know, we have a lot of the places that I go to, a lot of these places will have, you know, pull up chairs and things. So be mindful of that. And particularly if there are people standing, be mindful of that. No one wants to stand for that long of time. You know, I know this is your first book. I know this is terrific. And I think you should have, you know, a wonderful time, but be extremely mindful of your audience. And something else to consider that is the whole thing about audience. It's okay if you want to have someone else read with you. You know, I think that's if you're afraid for yourself, then maybe you can have someone else read with you. You can two authors in a bill is not a bad thing. I think it actually can, that kind of cross pollination is good. You have a chance to stay calm with each other. Benjamin Weissman had some, you know, really good advice that if you're doing a solo reading, says about 40 minutes. If there are two of you, 25 minutes each. Well, if there are a group of you, like maybe 10 minutes, you know, 10 minutes per person, let's say there are five of you or something like that. But, you know, no more than an hour, hour and a half. And the writer John actually gave me some advice about doing a reading. He said to tell the audience how long you'll be reading for. He says, I'll be reading for the next 20 minutes, you know, so that the audience go, oh, okay, good. You know, this person, 20 minutes, good. I've seen some because the audience will sometimes sit there and they're done. Oh, they're not. You know, things like that. I've seen that happen too. John Retchie said, the worst thing that could happen in a reading is hear these words, and my next poem is, and my next poem is, and my next poem is. But he said that could be the worst thing to hear in a reading, you know. So, you know, be mindful of the audience. And then the last tip, I think that's crucial. Oh, I'm about ending soon. And that the last tip, which I think is crucial, and I think all of them have said it quite well. Right? Write something great. You know, that'll be the foundation of your reading. You know, and we want to hear that. We're looking for you know, incredible things from all of you. You know, to write something brilliant. You know, the best thing you know how. That'll be the foundation. I think sometimes you'll sit there, if you've ever been on this end and you're watching people read, you'll see people sitting there like this. Just listening to your words. You know, so make sure you've got some great words, Brian. Okay. Thank you.
I think in the mystery world, we probably have to tweak what you said, Noel, from 20 minutes to probably 5 to 10.
Okay.
Because I think pretty much in the mystery world, we do shorter.
One or two.
People don't read at all in the mystery world, so you have to adjust it accordingly. But actually, Joan had asked me before, I had forgotten. She wanted you all to introduce yourself, just say your name, and if you've written a book, just the latest book?
Or your favorite one.
Your favorite, okay, your favorite book. So, Bob, why don't you?
Your favorite that you wrote? Or
yeah, that you've written.
Oh, I'm introducing myself to everyone?
Yeah, but my just your name and your book.
My name is Robert Spates, and I just published in May my second book in my Baby Shark series, and it's called Baby Sharks, Bulbos Blooms.
Great. I'm Bruce Cook. My first novel, Filthy and Fever, came out last September.
Ben Klinger, editor of the New Annotated Sherlock Holmes.
Rosemary Lord. I published Los Angeles Then and Now and Hollywood Then and Now on the history of the towns, and I'm just finishing my first mystery novel, set in old Hollywood.
I'm Patricia Smiley, and my third book, Short Change, just came out July 3rd.
Okay, visual writer. Library's closing tonight at 8 o'clock. Library's closing in about 12 minutes. For those of you who are on a computer, you need to bring your work to a close. The computers will automatically shut off in about 3 minutes. Library's closing at 8.
But we're okay.
I mentioned that I'm probably speaking more than death. I'm sure there's life after death. Anyway, all right, I'm happy to be Sins and Mysteries at F.H. Latest is it has a tremendous speech.
My name is Brett Battles, and my debut, The Cleaner, just came out a month ago.
Are you going to talk at all?
No. All right. My name is Aiden Barron. And my third book, which is a standalone, just came out, and Pat and I signed yesterday. Was it yesterday?
Patty.
Yeah. Was it yesterday?
I have no idea.
In the standalone, I usually write an archaeological series, a historical archaeological series that takes place in World War II. I write about archaeologists.
What's the name of the
book? My last. Oh, thank you. It's called the. It's called the Gold of Thrace. Thank you very much. It's called the Gold of Thrace, and I write archaeological mysteries because I'm a reformed archaeologist.
We're just observers.
Catherine Lilly, my first book is coming out in October.
I'm Tom Godfrey, and it's my last book was I edited was English Country.
My name is Joan Delhani. My third book will be out this fall. It's called Mud Love.
I'm just an observer. I'm a visitor observer.
Diane James, also a non-writer.
Carol James, my current book is called Body Count, a Killer Collection. I'm the mystery idol tonight, so I was
So I will give you a little bit more on these.
So question. Yes, I know this is a silly question, but I have shown slides because I'm an archaeologist. And they put people to sleep. In fact, I go to sleep when I'm showing them. Is it really necessary to show PowerPoint to show slides? Isn't it better just to...
I'd like to speak to that because I do festivals of authors in with schools. And that younger generation is very visually oriented. But the thing I don't like about PowerPoint is the words are up there and right. You are saying those same words right. As if those people can't read those right. Words. And that's what I don't like about PowerPoint. If you're showing slides and you're talking about the temples or whatever, I think that would be of value. But don't have 50 of them. Have 20 really good ones. That'd be my suggestion.
I would agree. When I did my slides, it's actually, it has very little words on it. It's mostly pictures. It's a picture of the book. It's pictures of the crime. It's pictures. It's more like that. So it's, you know, a few things about objectives and what it's all about. But no, I would agree. There's a good way of doing a PowerPoint, like anything else. A good way of doing a PowerPoint is a lousy way of doing a PowerPoint. And if you're just basically going to show it on there and read every single word, that's a bad PowerPoint. I mean, you know, but if it's visually oriented, lots of images, and you're just basically referring to it and you're talking like this more, I think that, I mean, that's a more appropriate way. And I just found that it was really important in an academic or learning institution to, particularly the young people, you know, to have something to look at and then they can ask questions too. And I've also read at the same time, so.
20 of them make an hour.
You know.
At least, that's
my experience. My personal power presentation had about nine slides, yeah.
So, and you spoke for how long?
I spoke for a good half an hour, 40 minutes. Just on those nine slides. But then again, I can go off. I mean, I can go off on, you know, so.
Well, I agree with what they both said. If you're just reading the PowerPoint, that's an awful PowerPoint. So you want, the PowerPoint should have bullets, but you should be giving additional information because you're the focus, not the PowerPoint. But I, as a college instructor, I also agree with what Joan said. The young kids, they need visual images. They'll focus on that more than just somebody speaking for an hour.
I just want to say, because I've not yet mastered PowerPoint, and when I've spoken with my books, because it's about the history, so therefore I have archived photographs, I've taken in half a dozen or eight huge blowups appropriate to the audience. So that's probably cheating, but it's the only way, because I can't.
You know, I didn't think so. If you spend a good hour learning it, it's more convenient because even if I forget, like I email it to the professor like a day before, so they have it at least, you know, and I can carry it on my little, my USB, you know. So and I just carry my USB and the universities I've attended, I just plug it in, you know, and then it has this huge screen. It's really amazing, you know.
I'd like to say something about slides also. Especially if you're going to do it in a school. Nobody has slide projectors anymore.
No.
If you have it, you bring it. Otherwise, yeah. Don't count on them to have anything for you. The easiest thing, because they all have overhead projectors, is if you can have something that can be projected on the overhead projector onto a big screen. And if it means taking your pictures to Kinko's and having them done on plastic, do it, because that way you've got a good visual.
I'm a nonfiction writer. Do you think there's a difference between a structure of, quote, reading for nonfiction and for fiction?
Considering your book, if I were doing your book, I would use your illustrations because
yeah,
they're wonderful.
Somebody asked me if I was going to read, and I said, yeah, all the footnotes.
Yeah, right. Your footnotes are the base of everything, but your illustrations are fantastic.
We've had you know, coffee table books, for example. People are showing their pictures, and actually it hasn't... been that bad. Actually, the pictures have been really terrific. And now they do go through the problems of bringing a projector and things, and you know. So, but anything for them to see and read.
My question was really a little different. My question was, if you're a nonfiction writer, does the talk really need to? The talk isn't about like me, like you know. It seems to me, I wanted to hear your opinion. It's more likely to be I'm talking about a specific point. Sort of thesis, whatever, and that's what the talk's about. It's not about the book. Maybe incidentally, it's about the book, but to me about sort of going to prove this to you or demonstrate this. Is that right or wrong or not useful?
I mean, we've had people do nonfiction stuff at Skylight, and if you can talk well and engage the audience, great, great. But I think the thing still should apply. There should be a beginning, middle, and end to your presentation, and engage the audience, and you know, not make it go too long, all that stuff.
Something to add to that, I once heard Scott Berg speak, who is a biographer and wrote many fine biographies about all kinds of people. But anyway, what he did was he also told anecdotes of his research, and the perfect opportunity for that, just coming back from, you know, vampire country, and you know, to tell an amusing anecdote that happened, and that would reveal something about your personality and also about your research. So that would be one example.
I agree. I think as much as possible, you want to insert some anecdotes. If you just tell and make it a lecture, it becomes a college course, and some people will get bored and turn off. People will remember those anecdotes.
Library is closing in 4 minutes.
Your comment before, I think, was well taken in reference to how long you can read at a mystery school. I have found, and I'm asking, you know, if is it important that a mystery writer always read from his or her work, or do you find that just talking about themselves or talking about their book ends up being a better presentation? Because I've had the experience that people simply would rather not have the reading. They'll come, they're interested in the writer, they're interested in the book, but not so much in hearing the author talk. I've seen the opposite too. But I just, in your experience, do you find that there's a middle ground there? Or?
Well, sure. I mean, what I will say to authors that come in is, hey, look, it is your night. It's, if you want to talk the entire time, you can. If you want to read, you can. It's just, I think, and we do call it a reading. We do call it a reading, and so people are coming expecting a reading, and I just think it's always a joy, personally too, to be able to hear an author read his work. You know, I mean, to have been able to have been around to say, oh, I heard Raymond Chandler read his book. You know, I think it's really, yeah, right. When you have one, I would have loved to have done that, and we've had. Do these Hamiltons, The Store, James Elroy, Michael Connelly, John Morgan Wilson, and they've read from their work. And it seems to be, it doesn't have to, you don't have to read for the 20 minutes, you can read for 10. You know, but I think sometimes some people are kind of curious. I think we just sort of like to hear the reader, to hear how the reader sounds.
Oh, no, I agree. Yeah. I heard Joe Lansdale read and could have taken, you know, twice that amount of time. Mm-hmm. He read for maybe 20 minutes, but could have listened to him more.
Yeah.
But other writers, 5 minutes of them, you know, I'll pull your ear out.
Well, for our literary guild, we say we don't want you to read. If you want to read, pick 10 minutes of the pithiest or most imaginative or most exciting, or the one that really defines the book, and read that bit. But the rest, we want you to talk to us. We don't call ours a reading. And the same thing when they do things in the schools. The one thing that, if you have a children's book, you can read the story and have kids acting out the parts. And then you've got something going on and you can read your story. Or if you're, again, a children's book and you have repetition, then you have your audience say it along with you when you're doing it. But a whole long time of reading, unless you pick the very best part of it, you can put your audience to sleep.
Yeah, something I've seen, we had writers who don't read well, and they know they don't read well.
Mm-hmm.
And what they've actually done, they've had their friends come in and read it for them.
Right.
Or of course, their friends are movie stars too. You know, so they'll have a movie star friend read some of their work. But it doesn't have to be a movie star. It could be an actor. It could be other people who can read your work for you as well. So there's that option.
Isn't the answer really, if you don't read well, don't read?
Good point.
That may be a better answer. I don't know.
Yes.
Well, how can people become better readers? Actually, Noel, I wanted you to touch on. You've seen some bad readers.
I have, and I've been in a situation where I'm reading, and people say, "Oh, I'm so glad you read because the bookstore staff says, I should have read that book. I should have read it out loud than the author, or you know. And I think, and I've also been in that situation where I've read an author who I love, and then I'd hear her read, and I've never bought a single one of her books again, because it was, her voice was so, you know. And I think, you know, practice, practice, practice. It's not, if you're doing a string of readings, and you have to do readings, you know, that kind of practicing. Then again, I'm biased because I do have, you know, my degree is in drama, so yeah, so I can manage. But you know, some people have gone as far as hiring a voice coach or taking acting classes or something just to, you know, to do that.
What can you give tips on selection of what, I mean, one
to the pithy of this genre is very action oriented. There's also a lot of, you know, history, right? So there's a lot of things, a lot of characters as well. Well, I always think it's nice to introduce the protagonist, certainly. I mean, too, where we can get a good grip of who the protagonist is and what the protagonist is about. And obviously, you want something to engage the reader. You want people in the audience who you've never met before to go, wow, that was really, really great, that was really, really cool. And I think Juwanza had made a point that, you know, just every once in a while just looking up and saying a few words about how this came about, if it's not too disruptive, you know, I think it can be very helpful. I think I've seen readings go where it's gone badly because the author has completely lost touch with the audience. I mean, and he's just, and without a breath, you know. It's okay to pause. It's okay to, you know, to be conversational. It's okay to be all of those things, you know. We're not necessarily expecting dramatic reading, but, you know, we're expecting some human you know, to read well and comfortably.
I'd recommend Toastmasters.
nobody
fails in Toastmasters, and you get feedback. And in some Toastmaster clubs, they record you, or you can bring your own recording equipment, so they'll videotape you or whatever, and you can see how you did.
George, isn't there a Toastmasters for writers?
Yes, there's a Toastmasters for writers is in Burbank, meets second and fourth Saturdays of the month.
How does that differ than Toastmasters in general?
Just all the members are writers, and they talk. They sometimes have some special meetings after the meeting about how to pitch your idea to publishers or movie makers, so you get some extra tips that way.
Teaching a class in Hollywood, and the best thing I do for them is just videotape them. Watching the videotape of yourself stumbling and fumbling pretty much ends that. You know, they never do it without rehearsal watching the first time. And then I think that's for all of us, you know, reading aloud to a video camera as if we're an audience, and then playing it back is usually horrifying.
Reading is so different from speaking. I noticed that I want to get it over with. I go very fast. Some people do that.
And then I guess it comes back again. Really, really do think about your audience. And really think about who's there. They, once again, I've never heard, you know, and I've been hosting events at Skylight for a good 7 years now. It's like, gosh, I'm here to hate this guy. You know, I'm here to hate this author. You know, they really, really, they want to hear you read. They want to digest the words that you're saying. They really want to understand what's going on. You know, and I think sometimes, you know, writers will come in and they're nervous and they don't know what to do. And some of the best readers, you know, the people like James Ellroy or Michael Connelly or Denise Sampson, they come and they are calm. And they are calm. They'll sit there quietly, you know, whatever it takes. And then, you know, when it's time to do the reading, boy, they're on. You know, they're on. You know, and it's, they're able to connect. Well, you know, not like that, not like this. You know, but they are prepared. They know that this is about the reader. I mean, they're there for their readership. You know?
I've been in small stores, not Skylight, where you may have someone reading and you have a small audience that's interested, but maybe the latest Harry Potter book has come out or uppers and people are moving around.
If it's a small group of people, something that I've done in the store, something I've done for myself as a writer, and with especially all that fussing around, and there's only like maybe five people in the audience, I'll say, you know what, why don't we just have a little reading group? So I will go ahead and just like, we'll sit in a circle, you know, so that we can all hear each other, and we'll just have a talk. I'll read a little bit, but it's mostly conversation.
Okay.
that's been my solution to small crowds and bustling stores. And sometimes you're in the cafeteria and the espresso machine is going, you know. So being able to like to sort of, you know, bring the audience in where it's nice and tight and compact has been useful for me.
I don't mean to take.
You know, every once in a while you will come across an author that is just exemplary. And I have heard Ray Bradbury, I don't know how many times, and that man can go on for an hour. And he is so interesting because he talks about himself, his wife, his family, how he got into writing his book, Venice, and it just, people will sit there and they're mesmerized by what he says. And I have never heard that from anybody else other than Ray Bradbury. They just don't want him to stop talking. They were letting him, you know, I mean, if he would speak all night, they would sit there.
So I've seen Ray Bradbury too, and I agree. I would sit there. I would spend a night.
What's your date?
Well, with that, why don't we take a 5-minute break? The restrooms are there, water's there, and the few mystery IELTS contestants. Get ready.